Welcome to the Hard Water Fishing Show. Jeff and Jason talk tactics, gear, and ice fishing legends.
We are alive, Hard Water Fishing Show, Season 4, Episode 11. It is the first week of February 2021. Tonight, we have a really good episode. I am super excited. It is Ice Road Truckers. So we're going to talk about going across Lake of the Woods to the Northwest Angle.
Although we didn't get to do it.
We did not. But
I'm sad about that. I'm going to admit. I'm a little sad.
But you're related to somebody.
I am related to somebody that did it. So that is a good thing. Yes. And that person was nice enough to talk with us about it. So that's super exciting. I do spend a lot of my time living vicariously through other people.
Yes. Yep. You got to do it because you can't be everywhere.
No. No, you can't.
All right, so Jason, what are you drinking tonight?
Beer? I am continuing in my beer exploration and awakening, maybe. I don't feel very awakened yet. But I found a beer, and Jeff, you can see it. I got to take a picture of this one.
Oh, my gosh.
This is called Zoinks Juicy Session IPA. It has a man with a diving suit on, all tied up in his diving suit. At least that's what I think it looks like. It's brewed in Iowa. It's brewed by the Iowa Brewing Company out of Cedar Rapids. And, it's not a very auspicious can. It just has Zoinks with the little dude on it and a little bit of color to it. And the Iowa Brewing Company doesn't have a story or anything like that.
There's no story.
There's no story. It does say, keep cool, drink fresh, and party on. So that's kind of a nice little
party
little cheer it has there.
It's like Wayne's World.
I know.
Wayne's World. Party on, Wayne.
So there you go. It's only a 12-ounce can.
That's a good size.
So I may have to... We'll see how it goes. We may have to double up. But all right. So here we go. Got a nice open. Oh, I got a bad feeling about this. Not bad.
So I have a hint for you, Jason. It seems to me that after 4 years that you may not like IPAs.
Are you going to set me free from this? Or do I have to keep trying it?
When it says IPA, I think you need to move on because that is not your
The trouble beer. Is there's not a lot of uniqueness outside the IPA world, right?
Yeah.
Now this isn't bad. I don't know. The first sip was not bad. I got more beer for you. I'll drink it.
Sweet.
Yeah. All right. Here we go.
Well, I am being really lame tonight. And I didn't get anything interesting, but I got one of my favorites, a Shell's Cream Ale. It is very good. We've had this on here before. It's made in Minnesota. It is one of my favorites. It's an ale, not an IPA, Jason. So I think you would actually enjoy this.
I probably would.
Quite a bit.
Yeah, it's the IPA thing.
Yeah, so this is an ale, not an IPA. And what's nice about the cream ale is Shell's is like a lighter beer. You know how sometimes when you get craft beers, I always use the syrupy word, but like it's almost overdone. So this Shell's Cream Ale is like just very simple, very light, but still has a good flavor, and I really enjoy it. So it's good. So that's what I'm drinking tonight.
Can I switch beers?
I have to drink this, don't I?
Because I can't pour it out, so I'll have to tough it out. Maybe if I had a whiskey chaser. Clean the taste up a bit.
Whew, maybe some water. All right. Well, I guess while you enjoy that, we're going to move on to show business.
Yeah. You know, can I back up for a minute? So, you know, opening a nice beer used to be the highlight for the show for me. And it's kind of become, I almost kind of dread it because I'm like, what's this going to taste like, right? And so I don't know if I'm going to be able to continue. How many more episodes we got?
I don't know. We don't have a limit. I mean, we're on 43 or 44.
Can we just call it season 5 now so we can start over?
No.
All right.
No.
All right.
So I think what it is when you go to the store, you know, it's like you go to the IPA section. Stay away from the IPA section. Well, go to the ales.
But
go
you understand the stouts, that I'm going to have to look around better because I've been going to like the gas station.
The gas station. And yeah, don't go to the gas station.
So we have a drug store downtown that maybe has more of a beer selection. So I might have to stop in there or go to like Hy-Vee or I'm going to have to branch out, Jeff, to bring some joy back to my heart about this section of the show.
And here's why I can't help you is in Minnesota, the buying beer is a whole different experience. Yeah. You don't buy it at the grocery store. You can't do that. You don't buy it. The stuff you buy at the gas station, you should not buy. I don't know what that stuff is. I don't know. They used to call it 3-2, but I don't know if they even make that. But it's something that's kind of like beer, but it's not really beer. And so you have to go to the liquor store, and there they usually have a pretty good selection.
Yeah. And we don't really have a lot of liquor stores because you just go to the gas station. But there are. I mean, there are liquor stores. But
yeah, see, in Minnesota, they're everywhere because you can only buy liquor at the liquor store. Like, they don't sell it at other places, except for the gas station and don't drink it
there. This is probably we're wandering down a long road here, but so like in Iowa, hard liquor is actually regulated by the state, and they actually warehouse all the liquor, so all the liquor runs through the state. So back in the day, back when I was a kid, there used to be state-run liquor stores, and you had to buy it at the state-run liquor store, and the guy behind the counter was a state employee. And now it is still all the hard liquor, not beer, but hard liquor, is still all run through the state. It's warehoused by the state. The state contracts with a trucking company to send it out to the vendors. But yeah, it's the state of Iowa is the middleman on all the hard liquor in Iowa.
Okay, well, I just thought we were weird in Minnesota, and then you told me
that. Yeah, that's a whole nother.
It's just all out the door.
I don't know what you guys do, but that's how we do it.
We just have a liquor store, and you go there and you buy it. So that's what I know. All right. I think it's time to move on to some fishing.
Let's talk about fishing.
Yeah. I think we might have dwelled on the beer section.
Well, you know, I mean, people
minutes.
Don't listen to us because we're linear.
No, that's true. That's true. All right. So show business, jazz hands. We are doing patron, not patron. Great way to support the show. I want to thank everybody who is a patron. And I got some stickers out this week. I got a couple more to send out, but we really appreciate that and really appreciate the support. It helps pay for, you know, putting the website out there and for hosting the podcast and, you know, kind of production costs of the show, so we appreciate it. Gear, you can always find some Hardwater gear out on Redbubble, and I hinted at this last time. We're still working on some changes for gear. We might get there eventually this year. It's taking a little longer, but we're working.
Yeah, I think it'll be good when we get to the end, and we'll see if we can get something that people can order more easily and a little more economically.
You can find us on social media at Instagram and Facebook primarily. We also have a TikTok that we haven't actually uploaded anything to yet, but we'll get there. We were going to do that when we were fishing, but we didn't get it done.
We need to try to do that at our Hardwater trip.
Yeah, for sure.
Decent recordings.
You can find us on our website, hardwatershow.com. We also have a YouTube channel that Jason still doesn't go to. We post videos, and mostly videos of the show, but there's a few other videos out there that can be fun. And you can email us hardwatershow@gmail.com. Pictures and any kind of stories or legends are welcome. And we read everything, even if it doesn't make the show. So that's show business.
That's awesome.
All right, Jay. So we got lots of listener news and current events today because we asked for a few questions out there and we had some emails.
Yeah. So we had an awesome email from the guy goes by the handle of Angling Ontario, and he sent us a picture of just a bruiser of a Laker. Just a beautiful fish. And so that will make it up to Instagram eventually. And then, or we may put it maybe with the show on Facebook. We'll see. Hard to tell how that'll work out, but it'll eventually come to, you'll see it. I would say that, let's see, what else do we want to talk about, Jeff?
So in the outdoor news, which I talk about a lot because I really enjoy reading it, I almost got you one for Christmas, Jay.
Well, that would have been nice.
But then I didn't.
I know. I got you the same thing I got you last year.
Yeah. Just the thing I got you this year?
Yeah, exactly. Nothing.
I gave you my friendship, Jason.
Yeah, and return policy is not so swift.
Gosh. So anyways, oh boy. They had a good article in there about that, and they said, you know, basically this year the lakes are situation normal. So they talked about some years where if we have lots of snow cover or lots of really cold, thick winter, that, you know, you can start getting to freeze outs and that kind of stuff. But really this year, you know, they had this article in there, and they have the person that really understands lakes, and it was a good article. And he said, basically, don't expect any overabundance of freeze outs. It's just kind of a normal year for a lake. So it's kind of interesting article in there. So I would encourage you to read it and check out the Outdoor News. So Zach B wrote in to us, Jay. Did you see that?
I did. And that, my hat's off to Zach. He found our podcast, which is awesome. It's always great to have new listeners. And listened to them all like in 2 weeks.
It's 46 episodes.
Yes. Yeah,
so, and they're about an hour.
It's like 46 hours of listening to us. I don't know if you're amazing, Zach.
It's awesome.
Our wives couldn't even do that.
Yeah, I know. Although my wife does listen to every episode, so
mine doesn't. But that's okay, because then I can say whatever I want, which is all positive. Always. She puts up with me.
And then we got another really good, interesting email from Michael W. from Ohio, but fishes in Western New York. And he talked about fishing near Door County, and he had it was like a buffet of fish. He had perch, walleye, and muskie all in the same weekend, and bluegills too. So
that's a good run of species. On our hard water trip, you'd end up with a very nice trophy if you had that spread.
Is species the
yes
fishing rod that weighs about 50
I believe
pounds?
It is, isn't it? If we're wrong,
it's made out
if
of.
If we're wrong, Dave will let us know. But yeah. I'm almost positive.
Yeah, exactly.
Species is the big massive fishing rod.
So speaking of Dave, you know, we're getting. I saw something today that is really cool, and it's a secret, so I can't tell you what it is, Jay. But so it you'll see it on the trip, but it is pretty cool.
We'll have to ask him about it when we do our trip show.
Yeah, I mean, it is cool.
So now he knows that there's something coming, though. You just ruined the surprise.
But you don't know what it is.
Well, that's true. That's true.
I mean, it's a surprise. You just know there's something. I mean, I don't think I'm not giving it away. Right. So
should we go to some of the questions on the Facebook there?
Yeah, we want to talk about. There's two other little articles we were mentioned. You know, two people in the last week or so have been rescued off the ice off of the Great Lakes. So 62 people from Door County were rescued, and then this week too in Duluth there were some people rescued when those sheets of ice break off in the Great Lakes and they have to go out there and bring them back in.
Yeah, so that's an interesting scenario. So that's, if folks that have listened, remember here a couple years ago, Jeff and I went and fished up by Duluth, and we did on Lake Superior. And the reason that was so special that year is that lake was locked up to where we were fishing, you could not, if the wind changed, you weren't going to drift away. And so that's what prompted us to make that trip and do that. And that's what happens to these guys, these folks in on Lake Michigan and then Lake Superior this year, is they get out there fishing and the wind starts pushing and it breaks the ice pack off and they're basically adrift. And so they're not like, I don't know, they're, they, I don't know if they're in
They're not going to drown, right? But they have no way to get back to shore.
I suppose if the ice really breaks up, it could get pretty interesting pretty fast. But they're probably just kind of sad. Now, the question I would have, would you keep fishing while you're waiting for your rescue, Jeff? Because now you're trolling. Do you put on a Rapala?
Well, you know, when you fish those lakes,
what do?
You're fishing in like 200 feet of water.
Do you vary your presentation during the drift? I mean, really, I want to know. So I also wanted to mention, if you're one of these people, right? If you're one of the, this is what I was trying to remember. I said there's someone I want to interview, Jeff. If you're one of these folks and you listen to our show, get a hold of us. I want to interview you. I want to know what it was like, what was going through your head. If you're married, what did your wife say when you got home? Did you tell her? I mean, I really want to know. Inquiring minds want to know. So get a hold of us. If you know somebody that was in this scenario, then you listen to the show, hook us up. We want to talk to them.
We did get a few questions on Facebook, and so we wanted to walk through those also. So,
why would a devoted ice fisherman live in Iowa? Kevin sent that question.
Well, Kevin, that is an excellent question.
You know, when you're young and you have love in your heart and you make decisions that have implications for your future that you don't always understand, you end up in places like Iowa for your life. And so here we are. So why am I in Iowa? Well, I was actually raised in Iowa, even though I was born in Duluth. But I'm raised in Iowa, and so my family's here. So that's why I'm here, because at the end of the day, ice fishing's only part of the year, and my wife's there all year. So it's much cheaper to live here. So that's why. And Iowa does, you know, Iowa does have a lot of fishing opportunities, unfortunately, just not where I'm at as much. But there is. They're definitely here. They just look different than what northern Minnesota would look like.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, there's lots of people that ice fish, obviously, in Iowa. So for sure. It's a different style maybe than, you know, Lake of the Woods, but so is everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, it's variety makes it fun. All right. So so this is kind of a little foreshadowing. It says, on Lake of the Woods, are the resort ice roads only to the ice roads to only...
On Lake of the Woods, are resort ice roads the only way onto the lake? So, no. But I would say that if you're going to traverse by vehicle, a couple of things, you probably need to stay on the resort ice roads. I mean, I would say to be safe or not get stuck or not die. I think if you have some knowledge of the lake, you can definitely take snowmobiles and go portable. But you still need to consult, I think, with people that have knowledge of the lake, because there are spots on that lake that are thin ice between islands, and there's current on Lake of the Woods. So you really want to identify where those areas are. You got to watch pressure ridges that form, and there may be thin ice on a pressure ridge. So it's like any lake. You really want to know the lake before you kind of go off-road.
If you're not, I want to say from there, that sounds weird, but like if you don't know the lake very well, and when you say know the lake, there's no way to know the whole lake, right? If you don't know the area of the lake that you're going, I would recommend using a resort. It's your safest bet.
Now, there, you know, some of the big basins on you know, towards the, in the popular areas, you probably could run a sled around there without much problem. But if you're going to get into more some of the remote areas, and actually like on the Canadian side, which you can't go to this year anyway, unless you're Canadian, and maybe the Chad is up there on the Canadian side, who knows?
Yeah.
But we just want people to be careful. So, you know, I think it's good to go cautious and learn the lake slow, but it's not like, you know, without outdoing your diligence and research, I wouldn't just strike off, I guess, is the best way to say it. Because we want people to be safe.
Ooh, this is a good one. What is your favorite rod and reel combo and why?
Jeff, you want to take this one?
So my favorite rod and reel combo is the one that catches the fish. Really, I mean, honestly, I don't go too crazy with my rod and reel combos. I really enjoy custom rod I got from Timmy Hall, and that works really well. And I use it outside and inside, and I kind of like it because I think I found that I'm more of a glass rod person. And they're not probably quite as sensitive. And like Jason found out last time we were fishing, the graphite ones break and the fiberglass ones don't as often. So I like fiberglass just because they're durable. For a reel, I don't buy a really expensive one. I like Pfluger Presidents because they're nice, but I also have some that are the $20 Bass Pro ones, and I think those work good too. So you don't have to go $500, but I don't like the really, really cheap ones, like the $10 ones. I tend to stay away from the ones that come with combos. I'd rather buy a $20 rod and a $20 reel than a $30 combo, because I think you get a better product from the reel when you buy it separately than the ones that come with them. But
well, so I have some St. Croix Mojo rods. Well, I had two. I have one now, because one broke. That I would probably be my go-to rod that I was using for walleye. For panfish, you know, I've been using I got here a couple years ago that radioactive pickle stick, that green one from 13 Fishing. Yep. With the free fall reel. And I really like that for panfish in shallower water, like 10 feet or less water. Because I like the, you hit the trigger on it, drops the little jig down nice and smooth. It works really nice, and it's got a lot of sensitivity to it. I tell you, that one, and then probably the other one I've had in my bag forever is a red Fleet Farm rod. It's fiberglass, and I've got a little spring bobber on it. And I, you know, for panfish, I've used that thing forever. It's got a crappy reel, but I don't know. It just works. You know, if I'm in water that's going to have a really big fish, I try to reach for the better, the Pfluger President, or there's another one that Pfluger makes.
Yeah, it's a step down. It's not the President, but yeah, I have some Daiwa reels. Yeah. I really like. I don't think you have to get a really expensive one, but I think don't get the cheapest one.
It's about
the
drag.
And, yep, and I don't love those ones that come with the combo. Like, I know the one that you have from Fleet Farmers works fine, and you could probably catch a trophy walleye on that and probably be okay. but you know, the real difference, I think, on the drag is, like, how smooth it is. Like, is it, like pulsating when you pull it out? Is it kind of like,
yeah,
you know? Or is it, like, a smooth, like,
yep,
you know? Like, so I think, to me, that's what makes the difference. But I've seen big walleyes come out with not expensive gear. So yeah. I would not let getting a fancy rod and reel stop you from going out there. Go buy the $20 combo. It'll get you a fish.
Well, and then, so, you know, so if you're not on a strict budget, you know, then yeah, I would be upgrading stuff, right? Because why not?
Yeah.
But if you're on a strict budget, put your money into warm weather gear. Keep yourself comfortable.
Yeah.
You're going to catch more fish being comfortable because you're going to pay attention. You're not going to be froze. You're going to be enjoying yourself. So put the extra $50 into your boots or into your bibs,
yep,
you know, or into your electronics. You know, long as you got the basics on a rod and reel, you don't need the $200 rod to catch fish, for crying out loud. Okay, I want to get to Blake's question, tactics for guys that can't or don't have a electronics. So that's a tough one. Well, it is and it's not. So I think for that, you got a couple options. You fish near people, right? So on the big lakes, yep, where there's a lot going on, like let's say Mille Lacs, you know, it's no question really how the lake runs, because there's so many houses and people out there. So you can kind of nestle yourself in there and kind of fish where people are. The other thing later in the season is fish where people have been. You know, you can see where people have drilled holes. Start in those spots. You know, if you know what the lake looked like in the summer, start on the edge of the weed beds or those where those transitions are. If you've got a smartphone, you can get Navionics, which for pretty, what, $10 a year, I think?
I think it's like 15, maybe,
which gets you in the game, yeah, and gets you some accuracy as far as what you're looking at. So, you know, you can drop a sinker down and a heavy weight down and get a feel for what kind of bottom you've got. If it sticks when it hits the bottom, you've got a muddy clay type bottom. If it bounces, you got a hard bottom. You know, so there's some things you can do to kind of figure out where you're at.
So Jason, I gotta say, like, and I know we've actually said this before, we've been on this subject before, but like, I would get if you can get the cheapest graph,
yep,
you can get an FL8 is totally fine. Hummingbird 35, I have one of those. They're totally fine. I don't have experience with some other ones, but I know there's some other cheaper ones out there too. Like the Markham has a kind of a lower end one. They're going to show the fish pretty well if you're at this level. They aren't always super cheap used, right? I mean, FL8s kind of hold their value, but you know, the Hummingbirds can be $150, $125 yep. bucks, something like that. So I would encourage you to get one if you can. I was thinking, if you had to have a manual auger but a graph, would you do that, Jay? Would that be a trade-off you would make?
Yes.
Yeah,
I would.
I mean,
but yep. you know, I guess, and I know all those things. I just, you know, I wanted to answer the question as asked.
Yeah.
Just because yep. I think that, you know, there's a different scale of economy, and sometimes people just, that's just not what they can afford this year, and they want to go fishing, and they want some suggestions. So,
I wouldn't not go fishing because you don't have one. Just go.
Yep.
And, you know, find a friend.
Find a friend. You know, if you hit a popular lake, there's always holes everywhere that yeah. there's no secrets on a lot of these lakes, right?
No.
There's so much yeah. population out there. There's just, I would hit every spot people have been until you found some fish. That's what I would do. And fish, the other big difference, Jeff, without a graph is you fish the whole water column differently than you do with a graph. You know, you start at the bottom jig and work your way up through the water column and then try a new spot. That's my opinion.
Max from Hardwater Freaks asked us a question about he asked if the muskies ate all the walleyes, and I kind of put a picture out there of a pretty nice fish we yep. got a couple weeks ago.
Jeff answered the question with proof that nope, they have not yet eaten all the walleyes. So there yes. you go. It's always good to...
That 26-incher was still in the
still,
lake.
And still swimming after that, or did that... Is that a...
Oh, no, that one went that back one went in the back. Lake.
I forget what the slot is. Yeah. Over. No, that would be outside the slot, right? It's two.
Yeah, it's 21 to 23 in the lakes, but... And one over... If it's over 28.
Okay.
But it was a really nice fish, but it was not in the slot. All right, so that was... Thank you for people sending in questions, and it's always good to hear from everybody, and... We'd talk all day about them, but, you know, we have to fit in this really awesome report about the ice road, and we want to make sure we have time for that. So a couple fishing report things. Jada, do you want to talk about your fishing report on Mille Lacs?
So finally got an opportunity to get up to Mille Lacs to see what the heck Jeff's always talking about. And I got to say, I don't know. I mean, we caught some walleyes, which was nice. I'd say we did okay. But man, they were finicky. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm not a proud guy really about how I figure out how to catch fish. So I'll tell the story of how we figured this out. So the fishing was slow. And so we started off with kind of all the usual suspects, right? With the buckshot. I went to, a drop shot, and that's where I caught my first one on the drop shot. So that was good, which was a tactic that Ole had told us that they had worked on the other day. We tried the red hook. We tried all that nonsense. So my nephew was with us, me and my brother, and he was fishing because he doesn't like to retie his line. He's 12, and he has a favorite little jig he likes because it catches crappies when he goes with his dad. And it's this little tiny tungsten jig, pink jig, little tiny thing. And he had taken his little minnow and hooked it through the lips because the hook was so small on the tungsten jig, that's the only way he could hook this minnow. And so he's sitting in the ice shack with his dad playing his video game on his phone. And every once in a while I'd reach over and go, oh, I missed one. And he'd have no minnow left. And his dad would be like, yeah, sure, whatever. And then I think about the third time he caught a walleye on that little jig. And Matt's like, what the? Show me what you're doing. And I could hear him, and they were in their other house next to me, and I could hear him explaining. He goes, no, tell me exactly what you were doing, you know? And so basically what it came down to is they liked a horizontal presentation with the smallest little jig you could put through the minnow's lips to get it down to the bottom. And we caught a number more that way with a horizontal presentation on it. Essentially, the cadence was you play your video game for about 12 minutes, you lose or you die, you give the rod a couple of jiggles, and then you play 10 minutes more, and then you catch a fish. So that's the fishing report. Small minnows, they didn't like the bigger ones. Right outside the house, we had a tip-up with just a minnow hooked horizontally through the back. Nothing ever hit it. We had another rod set up, tip down rod set up with another smaller hook and a minnow. Once again, nothing hit it. 5 feet away from both houses. That horizontal with a small pink jig. Now, I bought a whole gunny sack of little pink jigs, and I'll probably never use them. The one I ended up digging out of the bottom of my duffel bag was this old pink Ratso jig, type jig, because that's the only pink one I had, and I caught 3 walleyes on it, and then I ended up breaking it. So, yeah, so that's my fishing report. And I had to show Jeff how to catch a fish in his house because he'd been getting skunked all weekend, and I had to show him how to catch one of them. What are those things? Whitefish.
Whitefish tubelies?
Tubelies. God, those things stink.
Yeah, but somebody scolded me. They said, you need to smoke those. Every time you catch one of those, you get.
I know, but Jeff, they're hard to light.
Smoke those. Oh, man. So Jay, so where you caught most of these walleyes, who showed you that spot?
Well, you showed me the spot, but I would also point out that that's the exact spot I had already looked at on the map based on where I was saying, I'm going to try here. And then when you said you should go here, I'm like, well, that makes, in to Jeff's credit, yes, right where Jeff said to go.
Yes.
You know, we had to adjust a little, but not much. So that was nice.
Not much.
It was nice. Yeah.
It's my favorite spot, my go-to spot. All right. So that was good. I'm glad you got out there, and I'm glad you caught some fish. I didn't have a very good weekend, but I was working a lot that weekend. So I didn't get that much time out actually fishing. So gear, wanted to cover a couple quick gear things. So wanted to give a shout-out to a website called 3canoesmen.com. They had sent us some stickers, Jay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, awesome stickers.
So it's the number 3, canoesman.com. So they have some fish stickers. I put them on my laptop. It looks kind of cool next to my Hardwater Fishing Show sticker. You know, I think it looks kind of cool. I got fish on my laptop, so I like them. So I got a perch and a crappie. So they look pretty cool, so go check that out. And we had somebody else call, you know, earlier this year, Kevin S. Earlier this year, Jason, we talked about that... that Cabela's auger that you could buy. It was kind of like the Light Flight or the one you got, which is the, what's the?
The Eskimo one, pistol the bit.
Pistol bit. So Cabela's had kind of a private label brand one, and he actually got one and gave us a review. So he said he got one and he paired it with a Milwaukee Fuel on 5-hour amp batteries. And he got about 40 holes on 10 inches of ice.
That's
on one
real
battery.
Solid. That's a lot of holes.
So he said it weighs about, that's a lot of holes.
He needs to spend more. I mean, good for Kevin. I'm all about moving.
That wouldn't be my way, but you know. So he said it weighs about 12.5 pounds and works good. It has, came with a bag and an extension and has shaver blades like a laser drill bit and worked pretty good.
And
so
I took it to mean, based on what he wrote us, that 12.5 pounds is with the drill and one battery.
Yes.
Drill and
yes.
battery.
Yes.
So that, which that's super light.
That is super light. Because my 40 volt weighs about 25 pounds. Now I put the 10 inch chipper blade for the ice shack on there. It weighs a lot more than 24 pounds now with that big bit on it.
Yeah, there's not much savings there. It's still lighter than a Jiffy.
Yeah, although it was awesome. This was the first weekend when you were up there that I used the 10-inch because, you know, you don't really need a 10-inch hole, but the holes get smaller as it freezes in. So it worked really good, you know, that 10-inch bit. It was, I liked the chipper blade. It didn't grab as hard, so I didn't, like, twist my arms off when I'm drilling the hole. So, it's pretty good. All right. And I did get those ice hole covers that really helped out to keep the wind down. It was pretty cold and it kept the drift down. Jason, you saw those in my shack, right? Those holes.
Yeah, those were good. Covers. I don't know. It's still a little cold in the backside of that shack, though. I mean,
well, if the owner would turn up the heat and not be so cheap.
Yeah,
with propane.
He's kind of a stingy old fart, but it's pretty comfortable compared to anything else you normally do. So.
Awesome. So you want to introduce our guest?
I will. So we have an interview with Ron, who happens to be my uncle. And Ron does a lot of fishing. And I think he has done more He has put more people on walleyes up on Lake of the Woods when people go up there and fish with him than a lot of people. He just does a great job, and we really appreciate him meeting with us tonight and telling us the story of his ice road trucker experience. So take a listen to Ron. All right. We're here tonight with Ron Lawrence, who is known across northern Minnesota as one of the most premier ice anglers within a very small circle of people. Mainly my family and his friends. But I will say that Ron consistently brings home some of the biggest fish I've ever seen, and consistently, and more importantly, puts most of us all on fish whenever we fish with him. And that's no small task. So today we've got Ron here to speak with us about an excursion he took up the ice road, the northwest angle, to catch some monster fish. And so we're going to talk to Ron tonight about that. Welcome, Ron. How are you, sir?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Jason.
It's good to see you virtually.
Yeah, it's nice to hear and see you. I can see you on the computer, but yeah, it's very nice.
So help us set the stage for us. So you went up, you did a trip that I've wanted to do this winter, and like a lot of things in life, things get in the way. But then I hear that you, my dearest uncle, are on a trip with Northwoods Dave to the northwest angle on an ice road. Set the stage for me. How did this come about? How did this happen?
Well, okay, so here it is. So yeah, I will agree that I get you guys on the fish, but the biggest reason I get you guys on a fish is because Lake of the Woods is such a phenomenal fishery. And we go to my cabin on the Canadian side on Lake of the Woods, and we do really, really well. And it's because the Lake of the Woods is a great fishery. And I couldn't get there this year. No, none of us could get there this year because of COVID. And I was hell-bent to get onto Lake of the Woods to catch fish because it's such a great place to go. And I had heard that the people on the northwest angle, the outfitters up there, you know, they were stranded without an ice road. They were not going to have any business, and they'd be done. And so they built an ice road that I just found out cost them $35,000 to build.
Whew.
And wow. That's a lot of coin. I had initially heard that it was $1,500 a mile. Wow. And now I just recently I heard that it was $35,000.
Okay.
For them to build this road. And so the outfitters up there put in their money, and then I think it's like $120 per person round trip to go up there to help finance that road.
Per person or per vehicle?
Per vehicle. And okay. That was their lifeline.
Sure.
And so, okay, so we could go to our cabin. So let's give them some business. And I know the fishing is going to be good because it's like the woods. And so that's what we did. And we had a phenomenal time right in the middle of one of the worst cold fronts that I've seen, you know. So we went up there. So we went up for two full days.
Yeah.
So anyway, the first morning it was -20. Second morning, -30.
Oh, that's stout.
No, well, and that's okay for ice fishing, whatever.
Yeah.
But the point I'm trying to make is the fish do not want to bite when you have a cold front like that. Mm. They just don't want to bite. And in spite of that, we caught a 40-inch northern. Ooh. We caught enough walleyes to have a meal of fish up there. And we all had our limit to take home.
That's amazing.
And so how can you complain about that? And that's during a cold front.
Yeah.
That just speaks for how good of a fishery Lake of the Woods is.
So what type of presentation were you using for the walleyes up there during that?
Well, because it was a cold front, that they bit most on a dead stick.
Okay.
A really slow to nothing presentation. The thing that I learned from this trip was, so we used fatheads, which we normally use, mm-hmm. but we also brought light pike with us. And light pike are sucker minnows that are about 4 inches long.
Okay, so a good size minnow.
We had that. On one tip up that was outside, 30 below, you're not going to have a whole bunch of stuff outside. But we had one tip up outside and on a light pike, and we had one inside on a light pike. And then those were our experimental deals. And then we had our go-tos, which were what we normally jig with or usually use as a dead stick. And the interesting thing was that the majority of the big fish that we caught were on the light pike, on those big sucker minnows with a dead stick. I mean, they were alive, you're right. So they were alive and they're swimming around real slow, but those caught the biggest fish. Those caught one, because we had the light pike, we caught one northern that was 48 inches long, and we caught two of the walleyes that were 19 and a half inches long. Wow. Strictly because of that.
So what were you hooking the light pike on? Was it just on a hook, on a buckshot or something similar, jig? What?
Well, that's the other thing that just really blew my mind. So on the tip up, we were using one of Dave's tip ups. And I was shaking my head because it had this long shanked hook and directly tied to the hook was like ice line. There was no monofilament on it. It was just this heavy ice line.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it sounds like a Dave rig.
And I thought, well, the fish are going to see that heavy line hooked directly onto it. Well, I've never done anything like this before. Because you're always thinking, well, you want to be stealth on your presentation and not have them see anything but the minnow or the lure. But he had that heavy line hooked directly onto the hook, and it worked. It has me questioning some things. I mean, the one thing that I do know is about Lake of the Woods is that, yeah, it's got dark stained water. And so I really don't think this would work at all with a clear water lake or a lake that got a lot of pressure, because they're a lot more sensitive to anything like that. But
how about on your primary rods? Was that, what kind of lure did you have on there?
So, I mean, I'm typically a buckshot guy.
Yep.
And I catch them almost equally sometimes with a dead stick or jigging them. But it really, because of this cold front, it really wasn't about that. It was more about this dead stick presentation. Because we threw everything at them. We threw every color, every different size jig, everything we had in our box. We the first half day we were there, we really, the fishing was extremely poor.
So, and I want to just, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I just can't help myself. Dave changed lures.
I love it.
Yeah, we all did.
Wow.
Wow.
Was he the last one to change the lure though?
Because he usually doesn't change lures, Ron.
Well, I was so busy changing lures, I can't say it 100%.
Okay.
But I can say 90%.
Okay.
Or I can say with 90% confidence that he did try different lures.
He will hear this and let us know, but
yeah. You're saying 90% of the time you're 100% right.
No, I can say with 90% confidence that he changed his lure.
that's
pretty. I know. I changed my lure. I know I changed mine about 5 different times, and that really did not change anything. Mm-hmm. From watching my Vexlar and everything else, it was the dead stick presentation. I mean, I could see them. I had a dead stick presentation going. I see them on my Vexlar. Mm-hmm. If I barely started to pick up the rod, the fish ran away.
Yep.
And it would be like that for like a half hour. Come. It would come to lure, and it would leave. Come to lure and it would leave. If I had enough patience to just not touch my rod,
it would bite.
But it's hard to not grab your rod when you see them doing that.
I know. You're like, come on, just eat it.
Because you think, you know what? I'm smarter than you. I can entice you to bite.
Yeah, you can.
But no, not during a cold front. No, you just have to just let it be and maybe they'll bite, maybe they won't. And I think that was part of the key with that light pike out there, because it was out there 50 yards away from our house all by itself. And we weren't there to disturb it. And so the fish mm-hmm. would look at it as long as they needed to, and then they would finally hit it.
How deep of water were you fishing in?
Well, we were in, and that was the other thing that I need to talk to them about. So they had us in a 20-foot flat. Huh. Okay, but not within 30 or so yards of us. There was a hump that came up to 15 feet. Mm-hmm. And I like to be right on the edge of that break. And that's not where they had the house. They had it close to the break, but not right on it. And so we got some of the fish in that flat, but it seems like we caught just as many on top of the break, but it was so cold out that I couldn't be outside very long to be able to fish the break. Yeah, there was only one tip up, and it was Dave's.
Okay.
And actually, I'd like to buy one. So I don't know what the brand name is, but maybe you can help me out. So it's kind of a heavy plastic.
Is it like a TP? Like a TP with a light on top. Yeah, the firehouse.
Yep. Firehouse.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. What is that?
It's $100.
What that is. Yeah, I know. Well, yeah.
It's called a firehouse. I think it's firehouse is what it is.
And he told me because I pushed it into, keep in mind it was 30 below.
Yeah.
And I pushed it down hard into the ice because I wanted it low to get the reel in the water. And I said, well, how do we pull this out if it gets frozen? And he said, well, you just got to pull it out. And I wanted to fish after dark as an experiment. And he said, well, if it gets frozen really deep, we might break it if it gets frozen deep. And I said, well, how much is that? He said, well, if you break it, it's $100.
Yeah. So
don't let Jason buy that tip up. He'll yank her right out.
Give her hell.
I don't know what brand it is, but yeah, we all agree it's $100.
Wow. So let's, can we back up to kind of just the experience of driving up the ice road for a minute?
Hey, can we back up a little further,
Jay? Oh, never mind. We're going further back.
We're going further back. So
way back.
You mentioned
Jason, I got spanked by your mother when I was a child when she was babysitting.
You know, from what I understand, you probably
are we going back that far?
No, how far are we going back? It probably was deserved based on what I understand.
Oh my gosh, that's too good. All right, so we won't go back that far. So
come fast forward another 40 years.
So we talked about tactics, but you mentioned a little bit, but what, you know, normally we run portables and snowmobiles when we're on Lake of the Woods, but that's not what you were doing. What kind of accommodations did you have while you were up there?
Well, if you want to start from the mainland, so what happens is you drive up to War Road, and there's a resort there called Springsteel Resort. And you get on the ice there, and on the internet, you pay like $120 to access the ice road. And you drive the ice road for 20 some miles at a maximum speed of 20 miles an hour. The last time I looked, you can look on the internet actually. There are currently four different pressure ridges that you cross, and they're all different sizes, and they have these wooden bridges to cross those ice roads. And you just keep going, and you just go straight north, 20 miles an hour, until you hit the mainland. And where the mainland is right at the border between U.S. and Canada. And you start out, and they have it logged and blazed, probably 70 yards wide. And you start out going through alderbrush, and then on both sides of you go through a cedar swamp, and then you end up going on to higher land until you finally hit a real road that takes you to the to a lodge.
Huh,
it's
wow.
Pretty interesting. It's a really interesting drive. And while you're going along the drive in the woods, there's, like I told you before, there's these pylons that show the actual survey stakes for between U.S. and Canada.
Was that blaze and clear cut up to the road there, you think, before this? Or do you think that was all done specifically for this ice road?
No, I think that's maintained.
Okay.
I think that's maintained because it's a survey line.
Ah, sure.
I don't know how well they maintain that line. I don't know why they would maintain it as well if there wasn't a road there.
Sure.
But I know those survey stakes have been there since 1908.
Wow. So how was the traffic?
There's no traffic.
No traffic jams, nothing.
Well, see, when we went up, it was a Sunday, late in the day on a Sunday, and I don't know. See, I think most people are leaving. I just don't know how much business that they have.
Mm-hmm.
So all I can tell you is that we saw in the 20 miles that we drove, we only saw two vehicles going south.
Okay.
And did you see any, like, I call it ice road truckers, right? Like, did you see any like half ton dualies or a semi truck, or how about a car, anything like that? Or what kind of vehicles?
No. There was just our pickup and then a couple of other pickups that were going south.
Gotcha.
And that was it. So I felt actually spoiled by the resort, because I think we were one of the few people up there, and they did a really good job taking care of us. I think they were really appreciative that we were there.
What resort were you at, Ron? Do you want to share that?
Yeah. So it was Red Fox Resort. Okay. And so they go by another name. I think it's called Northwest Angle, maybe, Resort. And something like that. So these people actually bought out two different resorts.
Okay.
And they're maintaining both names right now, because, you know, if older clients want to continue to go up there and they Google it, well, then the name that they're used to seeing pops up.
You'd give them two thumbs up for your experience is what it sounds like.
Absolutely.
Cool. Very cool.
Yeah, we were up there that first. We fished for 2.5 days, right? Mm-hmm. And we got up there early enough that we could fish the afternoon on the first day. And then we first fished 2 full days.
Nice.
And then went home. Well, that first afternoon, the fishing was really, really poor. I mean, I've never experienced fishing outdoor, and I've never worked with these people before. And so I was concerned about, well, do they have us on the wrong spot, or are the fish just not biting? I just didn't know. And so the next morning, they actually check on you twice a day.
Oh, cool.
And because they want to make sure you're safe. And so they showed up in the morning and they asked, the first thing I asked them was, how's everyone else doing? Mm-hmm. Because I was concerned about how we were doing compared to everyone else. And they said, nobody's catching fish. And so that made me feel a little bit better, actually, because, okay, it's not like we're on a bad spot. It's just cold front. So, and they said, and the other thing that made me feel really good was they said, if for some crazy reason, fish are biting somewhere else, we'll move you.
Oh, that's awesome.
And, you know, I've never used anyone like that before. So I didn't know what to think. I thought, well, here's your spot and good luck.
Yeah,
you know, but they said no. If they're biting somewhere else, we'll pack you up.
That's awesome.
So that alone made me think, okay, these guys are squared away.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
And then they checked on us the next day, and they asked us how we're doing, and we told them how many fish we caught, and we were actually catching more fish than anyone else was. Well, and the reason why was because we brought an auger with us. And I don't want to be committed to one depth or one spot. You know me. I like control. And so we brought an auger
with us. I come by it honestly, don't I?
Yeah, the bloodline runs deep.
Yeah.
And I had holes pelted all over the place, and he was kind of surprised. The first guy that came through, the young guy, asked us how many fish we had, and I told him. He said, well, that's better. That's more fish than almost anyone else in our group has. And the guy that came later on, he said, well, you guys are catching fish because you guys actually fish. You know, I mean, so we weren't comfortably sitting in our house, in other words, right?
Yeah.
We weren't just sucking on, we weren't just in our house. The holes were already drilled and we're sucking on beers. And if they're not in that hole, oh, well, we were fishing. I was fishing outside in 25 below. Wow. And if my hands got cold, then I'd go in the house and I'd warm them up. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing I can tell you. Here's what I can tell you from that experience. So if you're in 30 below weather and your hands get wet because you're changing minnows and screwing around with dip-ups, your hands have exactly 4 minutes.
Wow.
And you're done. 4 minutes.
Yeah, it's just super. It's so cold, and we fished at those temperatures in the past, haven't we, Jeff? On some of the hard water trips, and it is so cold.
The tip ups, especially, you touch that water, you're putting bait on, you're trying to get it set up.
Brutal. And,
you know, you can't always use your mittens.
I was jigging with a rod right next to the tip up. I was jigging with my rod, and I lost one on my rod, And so I'm reeling that up and I'm changing the minnow, and then the tip up goes off.
Oh no.
And then I have to reel that up. And of course I missed that one too. And I think it was because it had that light pike on and I didn't give it enough time.
Sure. Cause you were right there.
And I yanked too soon. So now I'm changing both of those. And then my hands were done. So yeah, 4 minutes. You got 4 minutes at 30 degrees, minus 30.
So, wow. So did you think it was worth it? Like, was it worth the experience going up there on the Ace Road? Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, it was unique to be on the Ace Road, first of all, to drive that many miles on an ice road. And so there you are in the comfort of your vehicle, nice and warm, and you're driving by all these fish houses, and you're driving, you can see the islands off in the distance, and you're nice and warm, and you're just kind of watching the world go by. It was great. Mm-hmm. And then to see the pylons between Canada and US, to see the history of where they drew that line. Mm-hmm. The accommodations that we had, how well they took care of us, everything was just, yeah, it was a great experience.
Well, that's awesome. So we really, really appreciate you sharing that story with us. And before we wrap up tonight, though, we have to ask you, although this trip may become a legend at some point, as our guest, we always ask the guests to tell us their favorite ice fishing legend. And I think you may have told us a legend once before on another time. No, I think it was Mark that did. I don't know that Ron has told one. So, Ron, we'd like you to think about and tell us your favorite ice fishing legend story.
Ice fishing legend story.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Well, you're kind of putting me on the spot here. But so here it is. So I was fishing with my son, Andrew. And he was at the time, I think, 8 years old. And I had back, and that was like 30, that was like 30 years ago. And so back then, the portable fish house that I had a hard plastic bottom.
Sure.
And it was a suitcase style fish house with a hard bottom. And there was absolutely no snow on the ground. It was just bare ice.
Oh,
I see and where this so is I going. Had him. You can see where this is going. And so, he's inside the house, fishing, and I'm outside, and a gust of wind came up, and he slid down the fish house. He was in, slid down about 40 yards down the ice, and he's screaming. Up of his lung, he's pa. and I'm running after this fish house. And yeah, it was pretty fun.
Oh my gosh, I've never heard of one blowing away while somebody's in it
with a child inside.
Yeah,
that's awesome. And poor kid.
And I did my best. I had my 20 pound propane tank in there too, not trying to hold it down, but no, that didn't work.
Oh man.
Off they go.
I bet he remembers that too to this day, doesn't he?
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Hey Dad, remember that time you let me blow away?
Yeah, like a kite he took off.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, Ron, I really do very much, as always, appreciate your wisdom and your time that you spend with us, helping us catch fish and sharing your stories. So thank you very much for being on the show tonight.
Absolutely, anytime.
Well, we really want to thank again Ron for talking to us tonight, and thank everybody for listening. Take care and tight lines.
Cheers.
Bye. You've been listening to the Hard Water Fishing Show with Jeff and Jason.
Say goodbye.
One of the most unique podcasts on the planet, where we talk about tactics, here in Ice Fishing Legends. We'll be back soon.
Bye-bye.
Till then, signing off.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.